I love the Olympics. I'm it's this really cheesy part of me that is there from when I was a kid that goes back to the Calgary Olympics. And when the torch went by in Montreal in 2010, I was on Sherbrooke Street and saw it go by, and it gave me goosebumps that I rarely have. And I went home and I went online to the Vancouver Olympics website and I applied for a job. And I ended up flying out to Vancouver and spending 2.5 months in Squamish, BC, working in logistics for the Olympics. And what an opportunity that was. I got to go to so many events and just be a part of it. And it had this feeling. I haven't been to Disney World since I was a little kid, but I have a feeling that it was kind of like Disney World, but for adults and for people who love sports and love different cultures. And it was really the best. Now, I remember there being this corporate side to things that was absolutely terrifying. And the more money you had, the more hooked up you were, which, well, speaks to really just about everything. But the Olympics are in Tokyo next year. And you get the feeling that this has knocked it into a completely different stratosphere where everyday folks can really no longer afford to be a part of this Olympic experience. Here to discuss this is Moshe Lander. He's an economics professor at Concordia whose specialty is in sports economics and the Olympics. Moshe, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Good morning, and I'll say good morning. In fact, I'm in Calgary, the host of the 1988 Olympics, so this makes it all the more special. It's an Olympics that I remember and hold very dear to my heart.
Yeah, there was something really special from Eddie the Eagle and the Jamaican bobsled team to I remember the Battle of the Bryans. I probably was more interested in figure skating when I was 8 years old than I am now. It was an incredible time to be Canadian and have us all. Well, funnily enough, we were talking about Alberta separation in the last hour. Could that have not seemed further away during the Olympics?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, they still hold the Olympics with pride here. They wanted to run for the 2026 Olympics. And I think part of my excessive shouting of don't do it kind of influenced part of the plebiscite that was held here in the city where they ultimately decided not to.
Well, congratulations on that. You've saved them a lot of money. You know what? I'm going to start there. If you had had the ability to scream from the housetops to Montreal to not do it in 76, do you think that would have been a good move?
Oh, of course. Okay. Of course, the idea that the Olympics somehow puts you on the map is one of the greatest fallacies out there. I don't know many people that make travel plans post-Olympics based on the fact that the city once held the Olympics. So Montreal is a great city. It's a beautiful city. It's a tourist destination. And that has nothing to do with the fact that there's an Olympic stadium out in the East End. That it's an amazing city in its own right. And so while you might say that some infrastructure projects got developed because of the Olympics, those infrastructure projects would have probably happened in their own natural time anyway. So it's hard to say that spending was a necessary requirement or a necessary contributor to the Olympics, or that the Olympics were the motivator of that.
So the pricing for Tokyo, I'm sure you've had a chance to take a look at it, but a lot of plus corporate packages that are obviously priced out of your and my ballpark. But even for just wanting to go and sit in the seats and go watch something, this seems like it's hit a level where, I mean, and let's not even talk about the $1,500 a night three-star hotels, but just if you wanted to fly into Tokyo and go watch a track and field event, I mean, you might be looking at a couple of months' rent.
Yeah, it's not the Olympics that you and I were just reminiscing about, right? This is very much now a corporate event. And so when you start realizing that, you know, the vast majority of tickets aren't even available to the public, those things are predetermined and prepackaged out to the various national Olympic committees, the host Olympic committee, corporate sponsors on a global level, on a national level, on a local level. By the time it trickles down to what's available to the public, there's a very, very small portion available. They're not the premier elite events, or at least if they are the premier events, they're not on the, you know, final of the 100 meters. And the demand globally is so much beyond what's available for supply. You can't help but just with basic economics realize that that's going to push the price to, unfathomable levels.
Who decides the price? Is it the IOC or is it the specific games organizers?
Yeah, it's the organizers. They're going to set the prices, but you know, they've got good modeling. It's not like they're kind of mispricing things. It's they know what's out there and how many tickets are going to be available, and they usually in advance will start holding things like lotteries.
Mm-hmm.
The lotteries sound good to you and me, that this is a here's a chance to get it, but it's also a way to gauge where demand is. So if they need to kind of, you know, clear the board and reset prices, that type of thing gives them a little bit of market research that helps them in advance make sure that those prices are at premium levels.
We've got a couple of minutes left with Moshe Lander, an economics professor at Concordia who specializes in sport economics and the Olympics. Does this ruin the Olympic brand, or has it already been completely tarnished?
I think it's probably long since ruined between doping scandals and, you know, NBC, for example. We watch a lot of that here in Canada, and you wouldn't even realize sometimes that there's athletes that aren't American that are participating in the Olympics. So I think it's now moved beyond something that, like I said, is something that we would remember from our childhood or from previous Olympics. So I think as long as you recognize what you're watching, it is something that grips us every 4 years. And there's amazing numbers, especially within a reasonable time zone where we can watch this, say, during prime time. It's a fantastic watch. And we really do fall in love with it every, 2 years with winter and summer alternate. But it's a great spectacle. I think it's just important to remember what it is that you're watching.
I couldn't help when you mentioned doping now to think about what a role Dick Pound has had on the modern Olympics. From obviously his work with WADA and his steadfast work to get doping out of sports. But also Dick Pound is responsible for getting the Coca-Colas and the Kodaks on board in the mid-80s. So if you want to give somebody, I guess, credit and blame at the same time for where we are today with the Olympics, you just have to turn to another Montrealer.
Absolutely. And those things go hand in hand. You know, the idea that as you turn it corporate and as you ramp up the TV spending and all of the potential money that's out there in endorsements for winners, it of course incentivizes all the more so that incentive to cheat. And so constantly chasing the cheaters is kind of hand in hand with the corporatization of the Olympics.
I kind of wish I could take one of your classes, but instead of that, how about you come in and join me in studio for a couple of segments one day, and we can really get into the nitty-gritty of this. I bet you have some views on baseball in Montreal too that I'd like to hear.
Absolutely. Anytime you want to talk anything sports, you give me a shout, and I'll happily zip across the metro system that was built in part for the Olympics.
Nicely done. Moshe Lander, pleasure to speak with you, sir. Thank you so much. I will reach out.
You got it. Have a good day.
You too.